Welcome to Storybrooke.
Enjoy your stay.
Welcome to Onceable, Hyperbolt's Once Upon a Time podcast. I'm Jen, and I'm with Jess and Karen tonight, and we'll be talking about the latest episode, The Cricket Game. And before we get into the episode, just a quick reminder about how you can reach us. You can reach us at Onceable, O-N-C-E-A-B-L-E, at Hyperbolt, H-Y-P-A-B-L-E, .com, or through Twitter, at Once Upon News, or through any of our Once Upon a Time posts, you can leave comments and questions. And, of course, through the forums, which is a great place to discuss all things Once Upon a Time. Just really quickly, I know you guys were really upset that we missed an episode. Unfortunately, we had some serious technical difficulties, and the tracks were a mess when we recorded. We're not really sure what the problem was. So even though we spent an hour and a half recording a podcast for the midwinter finale, it didn't ever work out because the quality would have been really, really bad, and we didn't want to put out a bad quality show. So maybe at some point we'll try to recap some of the points that we had for the midwinter finale, just so you guys know what our thoughts were and stuff. But moving on to tonight's episode, we just finished watching The Cricket Game, and so we'll give a quick recap, and we'll go from there. So in The Cricket Game, Cora and Hook make it to Storybrooke, only to remain hidden so that Cora can set her plan in motion. Hook is not happy about this, but he has no say in the matter. Cora feels that she needs to make sure Regina has nothing left before she approaches her. Storybrooke welcomes back Emma and Snow with a party at Granny's. Emma insists that Regina be included because she feels she is trying to change. Snow and Charming aren't so sure. Emma speaks with Regina about how Dr. Hopper told her Regina means to change. Regina is not happy about Hopper sharing her secrets and publicly gets in an argument with him. Later that evening, Cora, disguised as Regina, enters Hopper's home and kills him. Red and Emma find the body and bring Regina in for questioning. Regina seems genuinely surprised that Hopper is dead, but only Emma believes her. Snow, Charming, and Emma agree to let her go, and then decide to look for more evidence before accusing her. Soon they realize that the only witness is Pongo, the Dalmatian, which I find incredibly amusing, by the way. And Rumpel helps Emma use her magic to see what Pongo saw. It indeed shows Regina killing Hopper. Emma is furious and goes to bring Regina in. She and Regina fight, and Regina takes off in a puff of purple smoke. Later, Regina watches as Emma tells Henry about what has transpired. Elsewhere, Cora and Hook are discussing their next move, and Cora shows Hook her prize, Dr. Hopper. When asked who she killed, Cora says she doesn't know, she's only been there a couple days. So, and then throughout the episode, we see flashbacks into the Enchanted Forest, and the flashbacks are primarily the situation between Regina and Snow, where Regina is constantly trying to kill Snow White. She fails and is caught by the Blue Fairies, Snow and Charming. Charming and the others, such as Granny and Red, feel that Regina needs to be killed, and it's the only way that they will ever be safe. Snow disagrees, and right before she is set to be killed by bow and arrow, Snow and the Blue Fairy intervene. Even after Regina gains her freedom, her only goal is to kill Snow White. A spell is placed on Snow and Charming so that Regina can never hurt them in the Enchanted Forest. At the very end, we see Rumpel shows up to speak with Regina and offers her a way to be able to hurt them, but in a different land, hence the beginning of the curse. So that kind of sums up the episode. How did you guys feel about the episode? Did you like it? Were you interested in it? Was it kind of eh? What were your thoughts?
I liked the episode, but it's one of those episodes where, like, I enjoyed it and was into it, but it was so frustrating. I just felt so bad for Regina. Like, I just wanted so badly for somebody to figure out what was going on. And so I was just like, bah, because it just was so not fair.
I was really saddened that nobody believed Regina but Emma. And then with the whole looking into Pongo's memory thing, Emma just flies off the handle and throws everything out that she'd been so building towards Regina out of kindness. And it's just so hard to watch that because Emma is so wrong and we all know it. But you have to watch her make that mistake. And I agree. I did feel really bad for Regina.
I feel the same way as you guys. You know, the whole thing with Regina was so sad because everything was stacked against her, all her past and, you know, everything that she's done before. And yet this is like the one time that, she actually doesn't deserve all the animosity that people are giving to her. So that was really hard for me to see too, and I was really frustrated, just like you were, Jess. Overall, I thought the episode was pretty good. It was nice, you know, first of all, just to have it back again after the break, and it was a good mix of the drama and, you know, the supernatural element and it being funny. There were some good one-liners in there and everything, so it was just really nice to have it back after the break.
This is true, and can I tell you, one of my favorite parts is when Henry and Emma walk in on Snow and Charming, and Henry's like,
"Oh my god,
why are you still in bed? It's 1 o'clock in the afternoon." And Emma's like, "Oh god, can we please get out of here? Please, let's go, Henry. Let's go, Henry. Let's go."
That scene was hilarious.
And then Charming's like, "I'm so glad we can still scar her and give her horrible childhood memories of her parents after all this time," which is so awkward and funny because they're the same age in a sense. So that just cracked me up with that whole scene.
So
and Henry's
true.
Like, "What are you doing?"
It was great.
Yeah, that so was one of my favorite lines.
I loved one of my favorite lines was when Regina and Archie were having their argument, and she was like, "Oh yeah, I forgot. You got your PhD from a curse."
That was
good. And two, when she tells Red to go take herself for a walk.
Yeah.
Regina did have some lovely lines this episode as well.
And Granny, when Emma was talking about eating food that she didn't have to kill first, and Granny was like, "You should try making meatloaf. That was a bitch."
Yes.
I know. There were some seriously funny lines. Totally sarcastic, of course, but like at the same time, it kind of lightened the mood because overall it was a pretty sad episode to watch. Because initially, I don't read spoilers, or I've said many, many times, so when Hopper was dead, I was like, did they really just kill him? They can't kill Jiminy Cricket. What are they doing?
Right?
So I was a little panicked because I didn't read that he was not dead. So yeah, so I was like, oh no! I was a little sad. So I think, I don't know, I really liked the way the episode started. It builds a lot of tension and it kind of, I love the backstory too, to see how, like, Charming was going to handle Regina, Charming and the others, that they wanted to, like, have her killed. I was shocked that they were so willing to put her to her death. That was really surprising to me. But let's start at the beginning of the episode. So let's talk about Cora's plan to isolate Regina and take everything away from her. Granted, I'll give it to her, it's a smart plan, because a desperate, sad person will go back to what they know. And for Regina, that's the anger and the hatred and the magic. And that's kind of what Cora needs from her. Cora needs to swoop in and be like, "I know we've had our disagreements, but look what they've done to you now." So she needs to be the good guy in all of this, which I don't think she'll ever be the good guy in all of this, but I think that's her kind of end game. So how did you guys think about how Cora was playing it out and her behavior and stuff?
Oh, it's a brilliant plan. I mean, it's the truth, because Regina, like, Cora is second only to Snow in Regina's, you know, hatred of ruining my life thing that's been driving her for so long. And so the only way that Cora can, you know, quote unquote, get her daughter back is to make everybody else the enemy and make herself like the one person that Regina can rely on and need. And so, I mean, it's a brilliant plan. It's clearly working. Hopefully it won't, but it looks like it's definitely on the track to work. So yeah. Very smart.
Cora is not going to get Mother of the Year award, though. I mean, she's so twisted and cruel. I mean, to take everything away from her daughter like that. But it just makes me wonder, too, if Regina finds out that Cora is the one that set her up, do you guys think that she's going to give in to her and, you know, be on her side and be all evil again? Or do you think she's going to try to prove her innocence because, you know, she still has Henry there, and if she can prove that she's innocent, maybe she'll get Henry back?
I think if she discovers that it was Cora that did it, if someone stops long enough to think about it, then I think Regina will try to get back at Cora. But somebody has to realize that it was actually Cora first, and not just be overwhelmed by her appearance, and not, like, they actually have to stop and think about that Cora could have done it. And I think that the state that people are kind of in at the moment, that's not necessarily an option. Because when you're panicked and you're just, everything's going wrong, you don't stop to think about what your options are. You just think about you're being blamed and the situation that you're in. You don't necessarily look at everything in front of you. maybe after the fact they realize it, but in the moment, I'm not sure they're going to realize it.
Yeah, what I'm curious about is because right now they don't know that Cora and Hook are back. And so when they do find out that they're back, like, are the pieces going to click into place? And at that point, it'll be too late. Regina's already sided with her mother. Or will it be something where they can amend the mistakes that they've made and you know, rectify it and make the situation better?
Yeah, I don't know. I really hope that they figure it out, because I actually thought Emma was going to figure it out right before she went and thought it was gold, because that look
Me
on
too.
Her face. Because basically this happened before, right? This is what happened with Lancelot. Cora pulled the same thing on them, and I thought Emma was going to have this brilliant epiphany, like, oh, you guys, I think Cora came through and maybe nobody would believe her or something, but... So hopefully they'll figure it out once they do realize that Cora's in Storybrooke now.
I can't wait to see the look on their faces when Gold and Gold sees Hook for the first time. So now that we know that Cora didn't kill Hopper, she killed somebody. Who did she kill? I think that's the next, like, it's kind of the underlying mystery of the moment for this specific episode is... Regina killed somebody. There's a body that's being made to look like Hopper, but who is it?
I think it's probably just a random town person, just because of the characters that we know, like, they were pretty much all accounted for in the episode, and, I mean, there's so many more characters in Storybrooke than the ones that we know, so it might eventually come to light where, like a tertiary character, somebody realizes that they're missing or something, and they put it together, but... I don't think it's anybody that's going to be, like, somebody that we know well at this point.
Yeah, I agree. I was almost wondering if maybe she fished the one guy out of the river and, or out of the ocean, I guess it was, and maybe turned him back just to actually kill him this time. I don't know. Who was that anyway? Was that a dwarf or was that just somebody random?
I think it was somebody random because they didn't know who she was, which I found odd as well. Was that it's somebody who just approached these two, like, basically in costume people and didn't, like, have anything other to say than, it's a good day for fishing, do you want to rent a boat? Like, hello, she's in an outfit and he's in a pirate getup with a hook for a hand. You've got nothing to say to that? Nothing at all. I just found that really amusing. So, yeah, I don't know. That initial guy, I have no idea who he was, but it'll be interesting to see if the person is relevant that she took out, if it's somebody we know kind of on the peripheral, or if it's someone that's just kind of in the town that we have know nothing about. So let's talk a little bit about Emma's belief in Regina and then later her absolute rage. Because Emma was really the only person in the whole first three quarters of the show that believed in anything that Regina was saying. And she stood up for her and she protected her and she wanted her to be included. So... And she says, you know, Regina didn't kill us. She could have. She could have done so many things, and she hasn't. And she's really trying. I believe she's trying. Granted, that is with some information from Hopper. But what do you guys think?
I was so proud of Emma this episode. I mean, up until the end. But throughout, like, I was so proud of her and the way that she was trying to help Regina along for Henry. And, I mean, we saw in the one scene where she and Regina talked outside of Granny's that she still wasn't really feeling it and had a lot of doubts. But she was willing to give Regina that chance for Henry. And I was just so proud of her. And then, you know, when she stood up, because, you know, charming can be so, like, forceful and this is the way things are, and she, you know, stood up to him and was like, no, like, I believe her, and I think that y'all are blinded by your past with her, and you know, you could just see, like, that Emma that we know, you know, the one who has the superpower to detect the lies and all that kind of stuff was just coming out, and she was using her skills. And just like when Mary Margaret was accused of murder, she was like, I'm going to find the truth, whatever that may be, regardless of what it looks like. And so I loved how she did that and how she was just standing there with Regina and standing by her side, which I think totally surprised Regina. But it gave me hope for Regina's character. And now I'm just like, ugh, I don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think that I liked it when Emma said that she recognized the look on Regina's face, the one about, like, you know, trying so hard to get people to believe her and trying so hard to do the right thing and just wanting people to trust her again, and how she recognized that look because she'd been through that same situation. And it made me realize that although Emma and Regina are very, very different people, they do have a lot of similarities, and they've both made mistakes. Obviously, Regina's mistakes are a little bit, you know, worse than Emma's, but it kind of showed me that they sort of bond a little bit over Henry and over everything that they've both been through. And I think later on in the episode, the reason why Emma is so angry is because she was tricked, or, you know, she believes she was tricked by Regina, and now she feels stupid just, you know, for the fact that she duped her, that, you know, she didn't really feel that remorse and that she was just lying the whole entire time.
Yeah, that's what I was kind of figuring where her anger came from too.
Yeah, I think that's primarily the basis of it all. And I think when you want to believe in someone and you go against others that trust you to believe in someone, when you're proven wrong, it's really, really hard to accept that. Because I don't think Emma wants to believe it, in a sense. Mostly because of Henry. She doesn't want to hurt Henry. And so she knows how much this will hurt Henry. And I think that's part of her anger as well.
And Regina was just so pitiful this episode. I mean, she just looked so pitiful and so dejected and frustrated. There was literally nothing she could do to get these people to give her a second chance and to believe her.
Right. And the second that they didn't, all you could see was her anger and her kind of dislike for them, in a sense, coming back up to the surface. Fine, if you're not going to believe me, I'll show you exactly who I am, is kind of the vibe I got from her. Which, I kind of like that Regina a little bit more than the poor, pitiful Regina, but at the same time, I'm kind of like, oh, don't do it, don't go there, you're so much better than that.
Right, I want her to take that strength of character that she has when she is evil Regina, and still have that strength, but be good. You know, like, still, like, not take people's crap and not let people walk all over her. But she can still have that strength and not be evil. You know what I mean? Like, I want her to find that balance between these two sides of her personality.
And I think as we move through the rest of the season, that will come back around, I think, to some extent. But right now, this is what they need her to do. They need her, in order to get Cora more involved in Storybrooke, I think this is what they need to do for her as her character develops at this point. So on the topic of Regina, let's talk about her bloodthirst, shall we say, for Snow White. Because in the flashbacks, she seriously is obsessed with killing Snow White. Nothing can stop her. And that Regina on the screen is just, she's incredible to watch because she is so determined and scary, and I couldn't believe how blood hungry she was for Snow White. Anything that she could possibly do to kill her, she was going to do. And I think that took me by surprise a little bit. Like, I knew Regina didn't like Snow White and Charming and all this other stuff, but this episode really highlighted her need and desire to kill her at any cost.
I was a bit taken aback, too, by just the vitriol that she was just spewing. I mean, it was intense. And I think a lot of that must come from the conflicted emotions that she feels towards her mother, and that she has all this anger and rage about the death of Daniel, and she has to have somewhere to channel it. And even though her mom is the one who killed Daniel, she's still her mother, and so she still has that conflict of, I love her, but I'm mad at her. And so instead of channeling it at her mom, she has to find a scapegoat, and so it becomes Snow White. And so that's why it's almost like her obsession is, like, to keep from having to, like, face the reality of the situation and relationship between her and her mom, and, like, just how out of hand and out of control things have gotten. It's almost like she has to hang on to this obsessive need to kill Snow White.
Yeah, and I really enjoyed the scene at her execution because, well, I have to agree with you, Jen, from what you said earlier, and I just really miss, like, the evil Regina, because she's so, like, I don't know, there's just, like both of you were saying, there's a strength about her. And I mean, Lana Parrilla, she's so good at acting evil, and she can just turn it on and off like that. She's amazing. I love watching her. So it was cool to get more of that evil Regina because she's fun to watch. But what surprised me about the execution was, I mean, it seemed to me that she kind of wanted to die. I mean, she knew that if she had just shown remorse, Snow White would probably have stopped, you know, the execution, and because she knows Snow has some sway over Charming and everything. And yet she just said, you know, everything anyway, like, I wish that I could have hurt more people, and I wish I could have killed Snow White and everything. And I just wonder, you know, what was going through her mind there, as far as, you know, just totally giving up and just wanting to go out the way that she did, I guess.
She's just so full of anger at what happened. I mean, her whole life she was subjugated and, you know, by her mother and dominated by her mother. And then she found, you know, this spark of happiness through Daniel and thought that she was going to get it and then had it taken away. And it's just like she snapped and just couldn't deal with it. And then, you know, especially after the fake Dr. Frankenstein, you know, failed resurrection or whatever. And so she just had such a life of disappointment that it's like, once she turned to that other side, it's like she can't, I think it's, you know, part of her can't let go of it, because then she has to face the reality of everything that she's done. And the good Regina, the nice Regina that we met from before all of this stuff happened, like, would be horrified by the things that evil Regina has done. And so I think a lot of it is just her, like, you know, trying to hide from herself, almost.
Yeah, and I mean, at least evil Regina has a purpose, you know? She's given herself this task, and if she goes back to the way that she is before, she basically doesn't have anything. I mean, Daniel's gone, her mother's gone. I mean, she obviously probably wouldn't still get along with Snow, and I can see her not wanting to go back to that hopelessness.
One thing that I thought was really interesting about when they captured her and had her in execution is, the way, you know, she was dressed in like those plain clothes and she had her hair down and all of the dramatic makeup was stripped away. So she looked, physically appeared more like herself when she was, you know, good Regina. But yet she was still spewing all the hate of evil Regina. And so it was really kind of interesting to see, because it, you know, up to this point, at least for me, like, it's literally like she's been two different people. And that scene was kind of taking those two different people and putting them into the same scene together. And I don't know, it was just visually, it was a really cool thing for me.
The other thing I think with Snow and Regina is that Regina lost her true love to death. I mean, there's no getting him back. And it was in her mind, it was because of Snow White. So I think part of it is seeing Snow White happy and so in love and so settled is very upsetting to her, because she can never have that. She lost that. And so I think that's another thing that drives Regina, is her anger and jealousy over the fact that, why does she get to be happy when she destroyed my happiness? You know, and then there's Charming, who's always not so charming sometimes.
Yeah, he but doesn't ever help the situation.
No, he and Regina just really, really don't get along. So yeah, so I think that feeds into the whole dislike in the background of everything as well. It's just, I was really just thrown back by how angry she was and how she was willing to give up everything no matter what, just because she wanted to get back at Snow. The other thing in that whole thing was the death by bow and arrow. Can we talk about that for a minute? Because really, you couldn't find a better way. What, we couldn't just behead her and be done with it? Like, three archers? Archers, get your bow. I was like, really? What is this? I'm sorry. What is going on right now? Has anyone ever heard of death by bow and arrow? Ever? Like, as like a firing squad?
Yeah, it's like, I mean, I do believe that they did used to have firing squads, for lack of a better way to describe it, that with archers.
I think it's the first time I've come across it, so I found it even more entertaining because of that. So, I mean, I don't know.
And it is still odd that they would choose that method as opposed to a beheading or something, because clearly they have swords.
They're big fans of swords, okay? Charming's right. got his own special one, so work with me here. Anyway, I don't know. I found that it was very odd to me. It could just be me. The imagery wasn't working for me there. So after the firing squad and Snow says, no, let her go. This isn't right. This isn't how we're going to do it. They get help from Stillskin. Am I correct in that? In protecting themselves against Regina. But that only works in the lovely Enchanted Forest. So being Rumpelstiltskin, as only Rumpelstiltskin can be, after Regina discovers that she cannot harm them and all this other stuff, Rumpel then goes to Regina and says, now you know, dearie, I know you can't hurt them here, but it only applies to here. It doesn't mean that you can't take them someplace else to harm them. And therefore, we begin the whole process of Regina starting the curse.
Yeah, this was like, I mean, I know that Rumpel's evil and everything, but I was so impressed. Like, I've been so impressed by him with all these strings he's had to pull to, you know, get this curse set in motion. Like, there had to have been a easier way than everything that he went through to do this, but still, I mean, you know, everything that he had to do, every person he had to manipulate, and everything that had to go right in order for this to happen, it was very impressive.
It's so true. I mean, he just has his hands in everything. Like, nothing happens that he does not want to happen. It's crazy.
And I almost wonder, he must have had to have Regina perform the curse in order for it to work, because if the end game was just for Rumpel to go to another world so that he could find Bay, which I'm assuming is his end game, why didn't he just do it on his own? He clearly needed to manipulate the situation to have all these pieces in place, because he's been manipulating this situation for a long time out. Do you know what I mean? Like, he had mm-hmm. lots of pawns in motion on this particular kind of game plan. He needed them all. So for whatever reason, he had to have everyone lined up to do this. And he had to have Regina perform the curse so that they could all go. So why couldn't he do it himself?
I think maybe that's his safety net. Maybe he wanted everyone's eyes on Regina and everyone blaming her for, you know, setting the curse in motion so he could just sneak out the back door and go do what he wanted to do and not have to deal with the whole, you know, all the townspeople blaming him for what happened.
That's a good point. That's quite possibly true. I just find it so, I don't know, I find it so interesting how he is such a master manipulator through everything. You know, watching that final scene with him and Regina, you can just see how he orchestrated that entire situation to play to his favor. So I can't wait to see more of him do that kind of thing, because you know he has it in him.
It's so true. I think that's part of why I'm so excited to see his reaction when they find out that Cora and Hook are there, because he is, I mean, we've never really seen him taken by surprise by something. I think the most surprise we saw was when he realized that Belle was still alive, and even then he was like so preoccupied by other stuff going on, it wasn't like I can't wait to see his reaction, because I think that'll be a shocker for him.
Yeah, I'm very curious. And will he take it badly, or will he take it in a, I'm going to now finish what I started? Like, or does Hook take Belle and there has to be some bartering and trading going on? Do you know what I mean? Like, there's so many things that could play out with that scenario with Hook, which I'm totally excited about, by the way. So I can't wait to see how that kind of works and weaves itself, because that's such a great storyline right there. So I guess one final thing we kind of should touch on is the whole Emma magic thing again. Like, we see her in this episode use magic to talk to Pongo or see his memories, which, I'm sorry, Pongo, why do we have Pongo? out of all the characters that show up, Pongo is so confusing to me.
I want to know where Pongo's one true love is. Where's Purdy?
Where are the other 100 Dalmatians? That's what I want to know. Where are the rest of them?
Right?
Anyway, we see Emma use use a magic dream catcher, ooh, very magical and powerful, to see Pongo's memories of what happened that night. Of course, she sees Regina, but she doesn't see the whole vision. She doesn't watch it all the way through. So do you guys think if she watched it all the way through, she would see something different?
I mean, I don't really think... Well, I guess if she had watched it all the way through, like, I wonder if Cora did her body switch in a way that it wouldn't have shown in Pongo's memory, or if she would have seen the body switch. Because, you know, she kept the Regina disguise on the entire time, so she wouldn't have seen Cora's visage, but she may have seen the body switch.
Yeah, when she took Hopper out and brought whoever else in to disguise him as Hopper, because at some point in time she had to switch them. So either she brought a body in with her and had already taken Hopper previously, although we see the person who looks like Regina walking in and going from there, so clearly she didn't bring that person in with her. So at some point in time there has to be something more that completes that vision. That would, I'm willing to bet there's more that would have completed that vision to let Regina off the hook. But Emma was so angry that she left and didn't watch it all, that she missed something important.
Well, I was wondering if, Cora could have, you know, transformed whoever the person was into, like, something that she could stick in her pocket and then take out and make into a big body. And then shrink up Hopper.
That's so weird.
I love it.
But it's true, you know, because she made that one guy into a fish. So she could totally, like, turn him into a cricket to travel in her pocket until she gets where she's going and make him a man again. Do you think that Emma let go of it on her own because she was so angry, or do you think that she was still struggling to use the magic, like, lost her ability to keep looking? Like, maybe her anger interfered with her ability to hold the spell in place or something like that.
I definitely thought that it had something to do with, like, her exhaustion or something, where she just couldn't keep up the magic anymore, because if you watched her face, like, she was really struggling to hold it together to keep playing whatever, you know, to keep playing the memory.
Yeah.
But I'm sure probably her anger did have something to do with it. Maybe it's sort of like an emotional thing. You have to be, you can't be, like, super emotional. If you want to perform magic, you have to, you know, have a clear head or something.
Yeah, because she did, I agree, she looked like she was just exhausted and was having a really hard time controlling it, and so I almost felt like her reaction to what she saw caused her to lose her focus or something to hold on to that little bit of energy she had left for it.
I don't know, it's all very interesting. I'd be interested to see if Emma's powers expand and if she has more that she can do, because I feel like right now it's kind of just little bursts here and there, but it isn't where it needs to be.
Yeah, I agree. Right. I think she's going to be really, really powerful, just given that she's the product of true love, and we all know...
I was just going to use those words. Yeah.
But, I mean, we know how... I mean, even Rumpel said, like, that's the most powerful magic, and, you know, now it's this person, like, literally this person is the product of true love. I mean, she's got to have some pretty amazing powers up her sleeves, I would think.
Right, and I'm wondering, like, how she'll learn to channel them, because, you know, with Cora and Regina, they learned the use of magic through that spell book, but Emma was, you know, born with it and has these natural abilities, and so I wonder, like, how hers will differ from theirs in that way, and how she can learn from it, you know, without having to resort to the tool that the others used that made them so evil.
Right, and not only did they have that tool, though, but they also had kind of a trainer, if you will, in Rumpelstiltskin. Right. So I wonder what his role will be moving forward with Emma and her magic. He was clearly a little giddy to have Emma do it, do you know what I mean? To have Emma use the magic and see. And so I think that Emma having power kind of excites him in a way that he knows that it can be used. And I think that that's what he's looking forward to doing, in a sense. Do you know what I mean? his intentions aren't pure when it comes to Emma and her magic.
Right. Right. Yeah. I think it would be cool to see the fairies teach Emma. You know, I mean, we've really only seen Rumpelstiltskin, you know, take the helm on that sort of thing. But, I mean, the fairies would, I would assume, would have plenty of experience using magic. And maybe that's sort of like a white magic to Rumpelstiltskin's black magic.
I think that would be a nice way to integrate more of the fairies as well. Because I enjoy them when they're on the screen. I think they're so much fun now that they're back to being fairies. Or, you know, semi-fairies still dressed as nuns. But either way, they're really fun. So I think I would like to see a lot more of that. Especially for Emma. Just to have someone train her and help her through this whole magic thing. Because as much as Snow and Charming are all about true love and all this other stuff, they're not really magic. They don't really have a power besides finding each other. You know, they're like personal GPS systems. Lojack or what have you. But like I think it would be fun to see Emma interact with people who do have power, who do have magic that help train her in that area. So I love the idea of the fairies. I think that'd be awesome.
One thing I wanted to bring up too was actually the Dreamcatcher thing. I know we touched on it a little bit, but I wanted to know if you guys thought that had any more significance than what we just saw in the episode, because I was remembering back to the episode called Tallahassee, where Emma discovers, like, her and Neil go into the hotel room, and she picks up the Dreamcatcher, and she shows Neil, and, you know, they kind of talk about it, then it's forgotten. But also, if you think back to the very first episode, Neil, when he's in his New York City apartment, he actually has, I think it's the same Dreamcatcher on his wall, and I just kept thinking, like, they didn't bring that up in Tallahassee for no reason. And I don't know if Dreamcatchers in general are going to have, like, a bigger theme throughout this season or maybe later on, or if it's, like, that particular one. What do you guys think?
That was a good catch. I vaguely, now that you mention it, I remember, didn't he give her a Dreamcatcher in Tallahassee?
Right, wasn't it a smaller one, I think?
I think so, too. I think he gave it to her. So now that you mention it, and I didn't realize he had one in his apartment, because I remember I was looking at all the signage and stuff, but I didn't realize he had one. So I wonder if the Dreamcatcher is what connects Neil and Emma in some way, and nobody knows it yet.
Is there any kind of a fairy tale story or story that involves a Dreamcatcher, and it could somehow be connected to what their fairy tale character would be?
Or I have no idea, but I think this calls for Pocahontas, just saying.
Dreamcatchers are Native American by design in most cases. Like, the idea is that they catch the bad dreams, or that they're spun by the Anansi the spider, who is the catcher of bad dreams. I've read those lores somewhere once upon a time. But, so, that's the only thing I could think of was Pocahontas as well. But it seems a little bit different from that, because if the three of them have the Dreamcatchers, or if we've seen that Dreamcatcher three times in relation to Emma and Neil, it seems a little bit more personal than to be just another, you know, character storyline.
Yeah. I'm wondering if maybe it has something to do with his memories could be stored in there from when he was in the fairy tale land. Although, I mean, from how they used it in this episode, really, you just need a Dreamcatcher and you, like, pass it over, whatever it is, and probably, you know, Rumpel had some sort of magic going on there. But it definitely, to me, seems significant, but I can't figure out how just yet. We need some more information.
That's true. I think it's significant now that you've connected those dots for me. I think it's very significant. Because why would it be in three places? That just seems, you know, once it's like, oh, that's nice. Twice, oh, that's coincidence. Three, there's no way. Especially in three very relevant, important places.
Right, and we know that they love planting those hints, and they always, you know, everything they do really seems to be very thoughtful and purposeful. So, yeah, I think that this is going to come up again.
All right, maybe our poll question will be, what is the Dreamcatcher all about? Does it represent a character? Does it connect Emma and Neil? We'll have to pick something fun and put it up in a poll.
Oh, one thing, what do you think Henry's reaction is? I mean, we saw, of course, he's upset, you know, at the end we saw him, like, kind of crying and hugging Emma. But, like, how do you think that's going to play out in future episodes, his reaction to this idea that his mom killed one of his closest friends and confidants?
I think for Henry, it's going to be a little bit devastating, because I think he really wanted to believe in Regina, especially at the end of the Midwinter when she, you know, pulls back and saves Emma and Snow basically in time. She fixes it because Henry's begging her to fix it. And I think that for him, that was a big step in trusting her and believing that she wanted to change. And considering Henry was kind of close to Dr. Hopper, I think it's really, really hard for him to accept that she's done this. This isn't just she's done something bad. She's done something horrific for Henry. So for him to have to believe that, I think it's going to be really hard on him as, you know, as a young boy and in his faith in this person who's supposed to be his mother.
Yeah, I agree. I think that this is sort of going to be the last straw for Henry. Not just Henry, but for everybody too. I mean, like you said, that this was really horrific and everybody loved Archie and everything. And I think that Regina is definitely going to have to stay on her toes now, because there's going to be a lot of angry townspeople. And I have a feeling that Charming's going to come back with a vengeance and really just want to see the end of Regina and just, you know, get her out of their lives for forever.
Yeah, that has a lot of potential to go badly on so many different levels.
It really does.
I can't wait. So, next week's episode is called The Outsider. And in the episode description that we're given is, Mr. Gold finds an unwilling test subject to see if a spell he has concocted will allow him to cross the border of Storybrooke without losing his memory and go in search of his son, Bay. Belle stumbles upon a vengeful Hook in the Storybrooke Harbor, whose main goal is to eradicate Rumpelstiltskin. Mary, Margaret, and David go house hunting in search of a bigger place to live. Meanwhile, in the fairy tale land that was, Belle meets Mulan as the two set out to slay a fearsome beast called the Yagao, who has been ravaging the land. I love that Belle and Mulan meet up. I think that's fantastic.
So intrigued.
Me
by
too.
That.
Yep.
So intrigued, especially like when in the timeline it happens, you know,
that and they're just so different, like,
oh,
to see
yeah.
them together to conquer a beast. I'm like, really?
Oh,
kind of cool.
So
though.
Intrigued, so intrigued.
And I'm a little afraid for Belle, who runs into Hook in the harbor, because, you know, Hook is just, he's a little angry, he's a little bitter, and he knows that Belle is Rumpel's weakness in so many ways. And I could see Hook wanting to utilize Belle to make Rumpel hurt before he eradicates him. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. Okay, so I don't know. And then the house hunting thing. What kind of house do you think they'll look for? Like, I feel like there's something to this, they go house hunting. Do you know what I mean?
I know, that seems like such a random plot point to include in the description.
But it must have some relevance.
Like, I don't
know. Do you
know
what I mean? I'm like, so what's about the house hunting? Because really?
I know, it seems so random to include that. If, like, that's literally all they're doing is house hunting, like, okay.
It might be for, like, comic relief or something, though, because, I mean, next week's episode looks intense. There's, like, a lot of parts between Hook and Rumpel that are going to be like, whoa. So maybe this is just them inserting like something funny in between, so it's not just all on us at once.
Yeah, and I wonder who Gold gets to work with him to try to cross the border. And do you guys think that he'll be successful?
I don't think he'll be successful. Or if he is successful, he is not going to be the one to go. I think he's going to send Emma. He needs Emma to do this.
But
and
Emma can go anyway.
But that's the point. So I'm not sure it's going to be successful. And in the end, he has to go to Emma and tell Emma that she has to do it.
I don't know, though, because in the preview, Belle was on one side of the line and Rumpel was on the other side. So I think it does work.
Maybe. I don't know. It just
yeah, I thought
it seems too easy.
Too.
It does.
I know. I thought I saw that too. But it just seems way too easy, doesn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And as far as, like, who his unwilling test subject is, I always feel like the dwarves get the short end of the stick, so I'm betting that it's going to be one of them.
No pun intended. I don't know. And it's all very intriguing. And I'm just really excited now that it's back. Like, I really missed it while it was away.
I know.
It was gone for almost a month, and I'm like, Sundays just aren't the same. I need my Once Upon a Time fix. I need to know what's going on. Because they just left it in such a place where there was so many good things happening, and there's so much going on that is still so unresolved. Like, what happened to Mulan and Sleeping Beauty? Do we get to go back and visit them and see how they're doing? Like, what do we do? So, I'm really curious, moving forward, where they're going to go with things. And, again, this week's flashback was fantastic, and just to kind of get that glimpse of how people wanted to obliterate Regina, and how Snow stood up for her, and just all of those things. So I'm really excited to kind of get more of that backstory as well. It makes everything so much richer, and you get such a better understanding when you get their motivations a little bit more. And then when shocking things happen, like, I would not have thought that Prince Charming would have been like, kill her with arrows. Like, I never would have thought that that's what they would have wanted to do with Regina, ever. So to see that, you know, takes you a little bit back and makes you question the characters that you think you know so well.
Yeah, I loved the flashback this week. I just thought that it gave so... And I love it when they give flashbacks that kind of connect the pieces that we've already seen. So, you know, this one ending on the wedding day when Regina goes and interrupts the wedding, which goes back to the pilot episode of the show.
Exactly. Yeah. And I love that full circle feel, too. I think it really adds depth to the show. And it makes you kind of pull back and think, okay, what else happened in the episode? Is there something that I really missed in that episode? Like, it makes me stop and think, what did I miss? You know, mm-hmm. Do I have to go back and watch now because I clearly missed something, or I don't know. So it'll be interesting, and I'm really looking forward to the rest of this season.
Yeah, it would be cool if somebody could, like, splice together the fairy tale land in the past, like, the stories to make them go in order, to see just that progression and stuff, because we got basically the end in the first episode and almost like the beginning in this episode, and it was just be cool to like see it from start to finish.
Cool. Eventually, you know, one day they'll probably separate the two and run them separately. That would be amazing. Okay. So just as a reminder, you can reach us at onceable@hypeable.com, at Once Upon News on Twitter, and on any of the posts for Once Upon a Time, and of course in the forums with any questions, comments, any really fun theories you guys may have. So thank you for listening to this episode, and we will be back again next week with the Outsider episode, which I'm really looking forward to. I'm sure there'll be lots of fun things to talk about. So thank you for listening, and I'm Jen.
I'm Jessica.
And I'm Karen.
Thanks, guys. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye, guys.